We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.
This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
I'm going to lead by example, and you're going to meet me, you're going to fall in love with me, we're going to have fun, you're going to realise that I'm just another human as well. And that's what I've always tried to do.
Today, I chat to Art Simone, one of Australia's most celebrated drag queens who you may recognise from RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under. Through creativity, humour and sheer talent, Art Simone has claimed her position at the forefront of the Aussie entertainment industry, breaking down stereotypes, celebrating differences and tirelessly promoting social inclusion. Art has helped move drag from margin to mainstream, and she's just getting started. Today, we chat about Art's journey from performing in a small country town to performing on a worldwide stage, plus their work championing visibility and representation for the queer community. If you've never spent quality time with a drag queen, I encourage you to listen to this episode with an open heart and an open mind. I loved getting a little glimpse into what goes on behind all the glitter and glam. Let's get into the chat. On this podcast, we discuss the learnings of life with extraordinary and everyday people, because every human being has a story and every human being knows what it means to be alive. I'm Georgia May and this is Life Chats. Art Simone, welcome to Life Chats. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Very exciting. I know a lot of our audience will know who you are and what it is that you do, but for those who don't, can you give us a bit of a mission statement or a summary of what you do?
I am a drag artist, actor, author, aficionado, and absolute superstar. I've been doing drag for the last... oh, wow, that's 14 years now, all across the globe. And I just love to bring a bit of sparkle, humour and a bit of joy to people's lives wherever I can.
Incredible. Have you always been like that? I'm interested whenever someone has a very interesting career, like they're a performer or they're on stage or they're, you know, entertaining people, I always wonder where that spark started. Were you a performer as a kid?
Oh, I have always been a performer. I've always been putting on shows. I actually wanted to be a magician when I was younger. So I used to do magic shows to my family all the time, whether they liked it or not. I've always been a bit of a clown as well. So it does make sense. But it is funny because even as a kid, I was putting on shows, but I wasn't allowed to, like, I wasn't allowed to do drama. I wasn't allowed to do like any of those subjects or anything, because my mum just really wanted me to be, you know, get a really good job and you're really smart, so stick to the smart subjects. But I still always found a way to perform. So I ran my own little drama club. I was like, well, if I can't do it as a subject, I'll do a drama club then. And then I managed to get the drama teacher to come in, and like I still would get like a weekly drama lesson out of it in the end. So yeah, I've always been putting on shows, always making it work.
How, if you don't mind me asking, how's your relationship with your mum now that she sees what you do? Is there kind of a respect and an appreciation for it?
Oh, my mum loves it. She is my biggest fan. There was a really big turning point during my high school years where when I got to year 12, my final year, I kind of had this epiphany over the summer break where I was like, you know what? I really want to move into the art world. I really want to move into performance and creativity. And I had to like sit my mum down and be like, Mum, I'm dropping chemistry. I'm going to drop chemistry and I'm going to pick up studio art. And that was like the only ever time we've ever kind of butt heads. But I know what she's like though. So I overthought the whole thing. I went to like my art teacher and got her to write a letter because I showed her some of my work. And I was like, I don't want to swap if I'm not actually good. So can I show you some of my work? And if you think it's worthwhile doing it, can I do that? So I did that. And the teacher's like, yes, I really want you. I was like, great. So we have to convince my mum now. So I got this art teacher to write this letter to my mum. And then I got another, like one of the student counselors to like talk to her about it and say, no, they're actually really good. Like it's going to be okay. And that was the only time. And mum said to me, well, if that's what you want to do, just be good at it. And I think I have been. So that's good.
I think you have too. I think it's one of those things though that if you enjoy it, then you're going to want to spend more time on it and naturally you become better at it as opposed to banging your head against the wall and trying to learn chemistry. Like I'm just not that sort of person either.
No. And I remember I had this wonderful maths teacher. I was doing maths methods because I was really good at maths and all those things, but it was so boring. I just could not focus at all. So he, for some reason, I would sit at the back of the room and I'd be like drawing and sketching and planning things and not paying attention to anything. And he just let me do it. And he made note of it. Like I remember at the end of year when we had our exhibition, like our studio arts exhibition, everyone, you know, puts up some stuff for the school. And he came up to me and he goes, "Glad to see that's where your time went. That's very good." And I was like, "Oh, good." So yeah, he was really lovely.
That's amazing. That validation's everything, especially when you're a teenager, you kind of don't really know if what you're doing, you're in the right direction and you're trying to figure out yourself. It's just nice to have that acceptance.
Yeah, it was. And it was funny because that work I presented was really queer. I was in drag for a lot of it and it was being put up in this art exhibition at school for everyone to see. And I remember being really scared about that. But most of the staff and faculty were all really lovely. And there was only ever one lady who worked in the office who pulled me aside and she was like, "Are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to put all this on display?" And I was livid. I was like, how do you, don't silence my art. And I was so, oh my God, I was so shocked. But looking back on it now, I realized that she didn't have a problem with it. She was just trying to be protective for me. Like she didn't want me to have any backlash or negativity. So she was just kind of being overly cautious. But yeah, it was only that one teacher. And I still put it all up and I put a lovely show on. So that's great.
Exactly. You sound like you're very self-assured and very proud and very grounded. Did you feel like you came up against people who didn't accept you? And were there any cases of bullying and whatnot? Because kids can be so cruel, especially when we're speaking about a couple of decades ago or 10, 15 years ago when there's not the awareness that we have now.
Yeah, look, I look back at me at that time of my life and I was just so blindly confident and naive because I didn't really know the whole world. I hadn't experienced any negativity yet and I was like, this is what I want to do. I was just fearless. I was absolutely fearless. And I was really lucky in school. I didn't really get too much pushback from fellow schoolmates or anything. I think they were actually a bit scared of me because I was like the weird artsy emo kid. Yeah. Who I was also school captain, so they couldn't do anything.
Oh, say like, no more.
Yeah. So yeah, I think they were all a bit scared of me. So I didn't get too much pushback at all. And definitely not for like who I was. Like I went to muck up day in drag. Like I turned my boys' school uniform into like I tailored it and added sequins and turned it into like a female presenting one. And I walked around the school in drag on my muck up day. And I found the other day, there's photos of me with the principal and all my teachers and all, you know, you look at everyone in there. The absolute too much, you know. But what do people normally do on a muck-up day? They dye their school dress a different colour and they go, "Oh, controversial." So you go along the line of all the people, "Oh, yes, the purple dress, that's nice." And then there's this giant bloody drag queen in the middle with a wig on. I remember I got up at like 4 a.m. to do my makeup. Yet again, fearless. I would never do that now. That's like, I would say absolutely don't do that. But I'm so glad I did because is something really special in being fearless and confident and blindly confident. It can lead to issues, but it's nice not to have like any darkness or fear or worry holding you back.
Totally. And I think from people sharing their experiences, it sounds like the journey to embracing and accepting or even just discovering your queerness can be extremely like traumatizing, scary, all those things. I guess, did you ever face that in adulthood? Because it sounds like you were really well accepted throughout your teen years and didn't really face any pushback. Did you come into that when you were a little bit older?
Yeah, so I, for many years, have been very lucky because I lived in my beautiful little bubble. You know, once I left school, I went to art school for a bit. I worked at Dracula's as a vampire. And then I entered like the drag world and I was only ever surrounded by my peers, fellow queer people and allies and everyone who celebrated each other for who they are. So I was quite shrouded away from that. And I really only started to get a taste of the big, wide scary, bad world and realize that not everyone thinks like we do. When I was in the Amy campaign, I did an Amy insurance campaign with my friend Filma Box, and we did this huge big campaign that was broadcast nationally. It was played during the grand final. It was on buses and billboards and absolutely everywhere. It was ridiculous for like 12 months. And then they kept doing rollovers and it would pop up and be in the cinema, the ad would play. And having drag pushed out into the mainstream like that to sets of eyes that aren't used to it or don't understand it or don't want to understand it brewed a lot of negativity and hate towards us and our peers in our community. That was kind of the first time I really got a taste of that. And I realized, oh, there's some not very nice people out there.
Of course.
Yeah.
Is it quite exhausting to have to explain your experience to people that just don't get it or they haven't been exposed or educated in that way? Or even if you're coming up against someone who is negative, do you feel like, you know, it's just not your job to have to explain your experience to people?
Oh, it's completely tiring. But because of who I am and what I do as a career, I cannot shy away from that role that I think I need to play. For a lot of people, even prior to me doing all my big, exciting, crazy things, I used to do, you know, like hen's parties and private birthday parties. Every single weekend, I would go and drive around and do like 5 different hen's parties and meet all these people. And a lot of them in these groups, I'm there for the bride. So it's because she loves drag, but her auntie may not or her friend may not. And I was face to face with that a lot of the time. And I always took it as an opportunity to teach and to educate, but not in I'm going to sit you down and tell you about my life. I'm going to lead by example and you're going to meet me. You're going to fall in love with me. We're going to have fun. You're going to realize that I'm just another human as well. And that's what I've always tried to do. I'm not the best at sitting down and, you know, speaking on a lectern and preaching about everything. I prefer just to, by like human interaction and contact and one-on-one, that's how I feel I can slowly change people's perceptions, because a lot of this hate and negativity comes out of fear of the unknown. It's all the mystery. And it's once you demystify that and you become just a regular person. Well, I mean, I'm a superstar, but you know what I mean?
Nothing regular here.
But that's what I really like to do. So that's the way I like to educate and lead and, yeah, meet lots of people.
Amazing. I imagine that discovering your like inner drag queen or the name and the persona that you land on is quite a process or a journey. Can you just talk us through how you ended up landing on Art Simone or how she found you?
Yeah. So I slowly evolved and adapted and changed over the years. I was originally Count Jacula.
Ooh.
My government name is Jack. so that was my first drag name. And then I left high school. I started working at Dracula's Cabaret in Melbourne. And that's where I really cut my teeth in drag. They let me do drag there. I remember going up to the office because we all have different costumes and everything. There's no drag queen. And I remember going up to the manager one day and going, hello. Would you mind if I did drag? And I was petrified. And he was like, yeah, go for it. Like, whatever. Like, and I'd like, I had workmates come with me to like, because I was really nervous. And I look back at it now and I was like, of course he said yes. Like, can you imagine? Like, you get a drag queen for free. That's exciting.
Exactly. He's finally got something interesting that'll call a crowd in.
Yeah. And that, to go back on what we were talking about before, Dracula's is also another place where I met every single kind of person that has ever existed, such a broad demographic. And we get these buses of people that were coming out from regional places to have a big night on the pier, see some vampires and go home.
Yep.
And for a lot of them, I was not something they had planned on seeing or meeting or knowing. A lot of them didn't know, was I a woman or what gender I was or any of that. And I used to wear a big breastplate there. Mm-hmm. So for them, they didn't even know what that was. So they thought I had real boobs and it was this really strange thing that that would happen. But it was my mission. Every single night, there was 315 people every night, and I'd go in there and I'd make every one of them my friend and they'd leave out there and be like, oh, you're not too bad. Yeah, you're not. You're all right. You're all right. Yeah, you're fun. So while at Dracula's, I was Anthrax. That was my name for a while. And then I was Scabatha, because it's like Tabitha, but better. But then I went to RuPaul's final ever live performance.
Wow.
And she did it at the Greyhound Hotel in Victoria, in St Kilda. And I bought a ticket and I went there. And prior to the show, just, you know, as the warm-up, the drag queen host there, her name was Tabitha Turlington. And we got to do like a catwalk to show off our outfits and, you know, get the crowd going. So they invited me up to do a catwalk and she's like, what's your name? I'm like, Scabatha. She's like, oh, okay. And I do this thing and then she corners me afterwards. She's like, change that name. Change it. So then when I finally, prior to, that was my first time in a gay club in drag as well. I've been doing drag for years, but I had never been to a gay club. I don't know why, but I was just at Dracula's every night. That's where I was doing drag. So I decided to enter a drag competition that one of the bars was having. And I was like, right, well, if I'm going to enter this drag competition, I need a new drag name. We'll start off fresh. And I picked Art Simone because at that time, I was always very switched on that I was building connections and a brand and a network of people that I would know and would know me for the rest of my life. And in that moment, I was like, I don't know if I will be a drag queen for the rest of my life, but I know I will be in this industry. I know whether it's something in the creative world, costuming, makeup, film, like I will still be amongst it. So I want a name that could go with me my whole life, whether I have a dress on or not. And Art is actually a male name. It's short for Arthur. So I was like, I want something androgynous and something that can go between the two. So I settled on Art, and I also did Art because I'd been going to art school at the time and having the absolute worst time in the world. I was doing photography at the VCA and I was just butting heads constantly because I was constantly being told that my work was too commercial looking. It looked too commercial. Meanwhile, there's like someone who's strapped a mattress to the roof and is like, this makes me feel about my sleep paralysis. And okay, that's beautiful. But here's me. And I'd make these really beautiful, crisp photographic images and they would just beat me down and say, too commercial. And then I remember one day the lecturer, she like sat me down and she's like, you'll never be an artist. I was like,
wow.
Oh, so then by calling myself Art, I was like, well, I am Art now. Yet again, there's some of that fearlessness, which I don't think I have these days.
I love that.
So yeah, so it's Art. And then in the world, Facebook was very popular at the time and you need a surname for Facebook. So I just picked Simone because I also knew in America and overseas, Art is actually like a common name. So they're used to saying it as a name. But over here, people get really confused. They're like, yeah, but what's your name? So I just wanted to put like a really feminine name as a surname because a lot of the oldies call me Simone because they don't understand Art's name. Or yep. So it's still something they can cling on to because that's kind of how the name came. That. And then the drag character evolved over the years to what it is now, which is a rigidige, fabulous drag diva.
A quick break from the episode to speak about our reviews. Now, Life Chats has recently hit over 30,000 listens, which is honestly incredible. So exciting. But we only have 18 reviews on Apple Podcasts, which is a bit sad. So it would mean the world if you could just take 1 minute out of your day to leave a written review for us, either on Apple or Spotify. There is truly so much time and care and effort that goes into these episodes. I research, edit, host, distribute, do everything all by myself. And I don't make any money from this show. I do it because the stories deserve to be heard and I truly love it. So if you could do that review, that would mean the world. You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Life Chats Podcast if you don't already. The goal is to build a bigger community so I can continue producing these inspiring conversations. Thanks so much for being here. Back to the episode.
A lot of people that are listening to this will know that you're on RuPaul's Drag Race. For those who aren't familiar, just give us a little insight into what that process was like, your experience, because I imagine a show of that kind of level and being so well known, that would have just propelled your career like nothing else.
Yeah, so RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under, reality competition series celebrating drag within Australia and New Zealand that we did to two countries, which was already a process in itself because it was during the pandemic. So we had to fly to New Zealand and quarantine. And then I got stuck in New Zealand because the bubble closed.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was, oh, my God. Seems like a whole other world. But yeah. It was a really wonderful experience. It was the first ever series in Australia. We'd had lots of international versions. So I was the first ever queen who stepped into the Australian and New Zealand version of it. And looking back, I think that was 3 years ago now, and it was a trip. It was highs and lows within my experience, and people's reactions to my experience was a really big thing because infamously or controversially, I was brought back after being shockingly eliminated at the second episode, unjustly.
So give us a little bit of inside information on that. Like, I guess there's one thing to be criticised or kind of people having their opinions who are watching, but then you've also got the people who are on the show with you, the other queens. Like, what was that, navigating that like?
Yeah, so eliminated second episode and everyone was shocked. Not that I was even up for elimination. And I remember when it all happened. It happened so quickly. And all the girls have known me for years. We all knew each other. They didn't really establish that in the show, but all of us, including the New Zealand girls, Electra I hadn't worked with before, but all of the other ones I'd worked with, I'd travelled with, I'd toured with, I'd done shows with. We're a really large country, but our drag scene is still quite small and we all know each other. So I was probably the biggest name in that show coming in. I had done a few other TV appearances and I had my own series with World of Wonder, who produced Drag Race as well. So I had a lot to lose and a lot of expectations. And when I was eliminated that episode, all the girls were crying, staff were crying, like the crew and the camera operators were crying. So it was just so weird. And then once I was eliminated, I checked out into an Airbnb waiting for my flight home because there wasn't very many flights because of COVID. And then like 12 hours later, I got a phone call being like, Ru wants you back, which is really wonderful words to hear. And I was very excited about it. But I knew in that moment, whatever I did from that point was going to be tarnished by being brought back. And I was like, so why am I coming back? Well, Ru wants you back. Yeah, but why? Like, how are we twisting it? Like, you know, is it?
Yeah, what's the angle?
Yeah, what's the angle? Like, what is it? Oh, no, it's reality TV. These things just happen. That people would be, and I was like, well, what do I tell the girls when I come back? Like, what do I tell them? Because they're going to be like, why are you back? And they're like, that you're back. And I'm like, but why? What's the reason? What is the reason? And they never gave me one. And they never, except for Ru wants you back. And that was it. So I took it and I had the best time. I was runner up. The girls were all fine because they were so shocked that I'd gone in the first place. So I didn't get any pushback from any of them, which was so wonderful and so nice. In the episode, there's us bantering, but we were just putting it on for the cameras because they sat us down prior to that episode and they were like, remember, we're making Drag Race. Stop being nice to each other.
Like, okay. Wow.
So because we all knew each other, we knew what to say and how to push and how to poke and how to play. But then as a result, when the season aired, everyone's like, gosh, these Down Under queens are so mean. Oh, they're so mean. The meanest ones we've ever heard of. It's still like you type my name into Google and that's one of the suggestion searches is why did Art Simone come back?
I actually told a friend that I was interviewing you who's a big fan and she was like, you have to find out how they felt about coming back. You know, episode 2, it was a whole thing. I'm like, of course, I'll be sure to ask because it is on everyone's mind. It's like, if you were so loved and so, you know, revered, then why did you get voted out in the first place?
Yeah, it was, I don't know. And I will never really know. I tried to poke one of the producers for information once when we were at like the launch event and we're a couple of wines deep and they just gave me nothing. I was like, I will never know.
Just got to say thanks for that reality TV and move forward. Hey.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, it has made me one of the most memorable personalities within the drag world and within the Drag Race universe.
Exactly.
Between my exit and my return, most people know who I am, which is a really, it's a gift, but it's a curse. But I mean, we take the good with the bad. I made great merch out of it, so I made lots of money off it, so that's all right.
Got to get that silver lining. something that you said or that you've kind of hinted to is that a big focus of yours is bringing drag to regional Australia. And I'm wondering why that's so important.
Yeah. So a lot of my career, I've just like I was saying before, in that I like to demystify what a drag queen is and what the queer community is by going out and meeting people. And I started doing a lot of work in regional places of the country. And I started out in Geelong, and I actually live here now. We started this little drag event and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I realized how important it is to create safe spaces for queer people and their allies in these more regional parts of the country. It's really hard to find community and find yourself and find fellow people. So I found a lot of joy in bringing drag to these places, because by bringing drag, I was putting on events. I was instantly creating a little safe space that other people could come to. And I even had a family member who was living in regional Australia, and they later came out as trans, and they had no one around them. They had no one around them at all, no other people like them, no one they could talk to. And they unfortunately took their own life. And it just terrified me and made me so upset that it's really important to create these spaces, because some people's lives depend on it. And it's been a real success story. So by doing these, especially within Victoria, I kind of started these little drag ecosystems in Geelong, Ballarat, Bendigo, and now there's like little hubs of these great communities and people that go out and celebrate drag, each other, community. It's really, really wonderful.
So sorry to hear about your family member. I imagine you are put into a position unwillingly where you become that person for so many young queer people who are discovering their identity and maybe don't see anyone that look like them on TV. And I imagine you get a lot of messages from a lot of people who are looking for support.
Yeah, I do get a lot that comes my way, and it is wonderful to hear just what visibility can do. Because that's all it is sometimes. It's just visibility. It's just being out there. So that's why I always get so excited whenever I get a new opportunity that broadcasts me into the mainstream. Because there's going to be another queer kid out there that sees me and goes, that's someone like me. That's also something I can strive to do. I can be on TV if I want to be. I can write a book if I want to. I can host a podcast. I can tour the world. I can do all those things, because that's all you really need. You need that visibility. And I'm so glad I can be that person for other people, you know, be the person that I needed when I was a teenager, even though I was very fearless. But I've done so many things that I didn't even know I could do, or that I didn't even know was a possibility. So I think that's really exciting.
Definitely. Something that I would love to ask is, how do you feel when you're out of drag? Do you feel like that character kind of stays with you in everyday life, or you're quite good at kind of switching on and off? Because I imagine people would see you in public and almost recognize you out of drag and expect you to step into that character. How does that look?
Yes. So with being on Drag Race, I already had a bit of a platform prior to Drag Race, but no one really knew what I looked like out of drag. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had your Superman moment where without my superhero cape on, I can just live my day normally. There's a lot of anonymity about it. But as soon as I went on Drag Race, everyone knew what I looked like. And I do have blue hair, so it is a
bit... You don't exactly blend in.
No. So with that came a whole new set of experiences and things to get used to. And while I am Art Simone, Art Simone is me. Art Simone is just a heightened, louder, more bubbly, extra version of myself. There's some drag queens that are really meta and third person about it, and, you know, they've got their full backstory on who they are. It's like, yeah, No, this is me, and that's what's most authentic. But people do expect you, when they do run into you, they really do expect you to be like, oh, hello, darling. And it's like, I'm just in the gravy aisle at Woolies. Can I please look like a slob and do like live my life? But I now know to turn that on, and I will turn that on for them, because it makes it special for them, you know. I mean, instead of walking away from that experience going, oh, she's a bit boring, it's like, okay, I'll switch. It's very easy to go in and out of it. But I did learn that very quickly, that it was expected that I was 100 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
And it's also like a role that takes a lot of energy, I imagine. It's not like you just change into a different outfit and you can continue being yourself. You've got to put it on. So what do you do kind of when you've got performances or appearances and you're just not feeling it? How do you step into that character?
Yeah, so I am very introverted outside of drag. So it takes a lot of energy for me to work and perform. I absolutely love it. I'm not complaining about it at all. But because of that, there's a lot of processes I have to put in place to ensure that I'm good to go, you know? And for me, that is just downtime. I always try to get ready alone where I can. So I'm just by myself doing my makeup. And that's, you know, 2-3 hours of just recharging my batteries. That's really important for me. And it's just, I just need alone time and solo time, and then I'm good to go. But on those days where I don't think I have it in me, I just crack open an energy drink and I go, here we go. I just, sometimes it's just like jumping off a cliff. You just got to do it. And then, not in that way, like to
not literally.
I always say, I'm like, the train has left the station. Once it's going, we're good to go. But I tell you, sometimes you're like, I do not have it in me. But I'm always quickly reminded of all the bits that I do love and why I've been doing this for so long and why I will continue to be a drag queen. And that's just making people laugh and feel happy and give them a sense of escapism. I started drag as a very self-centric and very self-centered reason in that it was all about me. I wanted to feel big. I wanted to feel powerful. I wanted all the eyes on me. I wanted to do performances of songs that only I knew because they meant something to me. And I learned really quickly that it's not about me. Like the best thing I can do is instead of making me feel big, I can find the person in the room that feels the absolute smallest and make them feel the biggest I can. That's where I really get the joy and what really makes me happy. I just really love connecting with people and making them laugh and just giving them a little break from the real world. That's the best thing I can ever do.
That's extremely powerful, like to have that mission behind why you do what you do. I guess for those who look up to you or get that from your performances, that sense of happiness and joy, where do you get that from? Are you looking up to certain drag queens or performers? Like, I'm really interested to hear who your idols are.
I'm so cliche in my idols as a gay man in that I'm like, Lady Gaga, duh. Like,
obviously.
Like, she is, oh my God. I know it sounds so basic, but she is incredible and inspired me greatly throughout my entire drag career. You know, she hit the scene when I was in high school and she's been following me along in my whole life. Like, she's just always there doing things and inspiring me. And the absolute strength, power, versatility. She's incredible. She inspires me every day. I've seen her perform so many times live. And I remember the last time I saw her, I flew over to the US to see her and I was like crying the whole time. And I was like, people look up to me and say that I'm good. I'm nothing like this. Like, look at this. She's just amazing. Why do people even say to me that I inspire them when this is there? Besides Lady Gaga, my inspiration and motivation also comes from people like my mum. My mum has faced a lot of adversity through her life and she's one of the strongest people I know. And she inspires me every single day. She motivates me. She's my biggest fan. And if I can be half the person she is, I'll be a very, very happy being.
That is really beautiful. I went to Lady Gaga as one of my first ever concerts and honestly, never forget. I think she came out of a giant like vagina at one point and mm-hmm. then she was on a horse. Like I was 13 years.
You would have said that was the Born This Way ball. This way. I remember it. Yes.
There we
yes,
go. Well. It was just like an experience. Let's just leave it at that.
And then I've seen her shows. Like I've traveled to the US and seen her jazz and piano show twice.
Oh, wow.
Where it's just her and a band
yes.
and chatting. And without all the glitz and costumes and stunts and sets and dances and just her raw talent and singing and playing piano, it is just incredible. Just so good.
Extremely talented person.
I know.
Now let's quickly touch on, you've got a new book out, Drag Queens Down Under, but you've also, or coming out shortly, I should say, you've yes. also got your book Life is Art. Can you just tell people a bit about what's in both of those if they want to get their hands on them, how the process was putting those together?
Yeah, so Life is Art is my first book. It's a drag queen's guide to living a technicolor life. It's filled with tips, tricks, and tidbits on how to be as fabulous as a drag queen. And throughout there, I've shared multiple stories and experiences that I've gone through. So it's not exactly a memoir, but there are stories right from my teen years to now to a big, beefy chapter about Drag Race and the behind the scenes info from there, for all answering all the questions that people have, the ones that I have answers to. And then it's color coded and filled with gorgeous imagery of all of my makeup looks from the first decade of my career. So it's a rainbow retrospective, and it's I'm very proud of that. And I'm so glad that I've kind of got that legacy piece that I can always look back on. And on the other hand, Forget About Me, Drag Queens Down Under is a book that I've put together. I toured around Australia last year, profiling 30 of Australia's best and brightest drag stars. And through that, they have shared stories and tales and lots of information from their own lives, spliced together with some gorgeous imagery. And through meeting all these individuals and through their lens and through that, they become the gateway to mapping out the history of Australian drag, from Les Girls to Priscilla to Drag Race, and then whatever comes after that, it's all in this book. And I can't wait for everyone to meet these queens. And it's really unique because it's the first time ever where Australian drag artists have been profiled and platformed by a fellow queen, because we often get a lot of people being like, I want to write a book, and they go and try and profile some drag queens, but they go, what's your favourite song to perform to? And how long does it take to do your makeup? And that it doesn't get anywhere beyond that. Yes. Whereas these queens I know and know well, so we were already able to bypass all of that and get to the good stuff. And I'm very, 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 very excited. Every drag opportunity I have, I try to use my spotlight to shine the spotlight on others, because I've been very fortunate to be given many opportunities. Well, not given, I earned them, but
totally.
I got those. And wherever I can, I like to profile and platform all these other fabulous people from my community, because the opportunities aren't out there. And I'm so proud of all these people. There was a lot of pushback on Drag Race and Down Under and what it did to represent our scene. And a lot of people don't think it was done correctly and wasn't really actively portraying the complexities and diverseness that we have here. So I always try to do that where I can, and I know I've succeeded with this book that comes out in just a few weeks.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Just on that, what would you like to see changed in the industry to give people more opportunity, visibility, or just any areas for kind of growth that you feel like you'd like to see in the next few decades of your career?
Yeah, well, I think we still need more drag opportunities in the mainstream, because in Australia, it's so strange. We have such a broad history of drag in this country, from Dame Edna to Priscilla to Arnie Jack, like Les Girls. Drag is always part and parcel with Australia. But for some reason, the mainstream media landscape is really afraid to give opportunities to drag performers. Because you look overseas in the UK and there's a drag queen on a TV show every 5 seconds. Like, and one big thing that I've been struggling and pushing through is I'm seen as a novelty. Like, I've got to do lots of exciting things, but I'm a special guest, or I pop in for 5 seconds and go, da-da-da, colour and movement. But drag artists are some of the most multi-skilled people you will ever meet, because we're comedians, we're actors, we're live entertainers, we're makeup artists, we're costumiers, we're designers. We can do everything that those people do, but then some. So it's like, what? Swap out a random comedian man going, telling jokes. I don't want him. Put a drag queen on there. I don't know. Maybe we steal too much thunder. But that's where I'm really trying to push. I'm trying to get drag even more into the mainstream within the Australian media landscape, because it deserves to be there. It's part of our history. And, you know, more people need to get in on the fun.
Love that. I can't wait to get my hands on that book as well in a few weeks. What's the date that it's coming out?
October 29.
Incredible.
Yeah, so it's available nationwide at all good bookstores. So
amazing. We'll pop some links in the show notes as well for people to grab it. Now, we can't end this conversation without asking the question that I ask every single guest. You can answer in as many or as little words as you like, but that question is, Art, what is the meaning of life?
Oh, the meaning of life is to leave the world in a better place than when you arrived. I think that's really what it needs to be.
That's beautiful and very powerful. Thank you so much for sharing all your experiences today and giving us a little insight into your life behind the costumes and behind the performances. I think people will be really amazed to kind of hear you speak about your process and your journey. And I'm just so excited and, yeah, grateful to see where your journey takes you, because I know it's going to be big things. It's going to be Lady Gaga level.
Oh, Lady Gaga. He's hoping.
Thanks. Just let our audience know where they can find you or get in touch.
Yeah, go to my website, artsimone.com, or just search Art Simone anywhere and you'll find me. I'll be popping around. But I am currently touring nationwide with Fountain Lakes in Lockdown, a drag parody play of Kath and Kim. So come along to one of those shows, kathandkimplay.com as well.
I mean, what's not to love? Two icons in one.
I know.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please let me know who you'd love me to chat to next. Or if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, you can connect with me directly on Instagram at Life Chats Podcast, one word. Until next time, I'm Georgia May, and this is Life Chats.